Let's turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 29 and the last verse of that chapter. I always think this is a great verse for the end of the year. I've preached on it before, particularly when New Year's Eve has been a Sunday. And verse 29 tells us three very simple things. Deuteronomy 29, verse 29, the secret things belong to the Lord our God. But those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. We reminded ourselves already tonight how this verse came into being and what the context of this verse is. We should never rip texts out of their context, should we? But we know that this sermon, these sermons, the book of Deuteronomy, are the sermons of Moses. As the children of Israel are about to enter the promised land, Moses is not going to be allowed to enter the promised land. We have a story in the last chapter of Deuteronomy, chapter 34. We know that why that is. But children of Israel are going to go, and they're going to enter the promised land. And the 40 years that they've been trampling through the wilderness, this long journey, unnecessarily long because of their sinfulness and their rebellion against God. But that long journey is coming to an end. And life is going to begin in Canaan, in the promised land, in the land that God had promised to their forefathers and to them. And so here they are. They're on the cusp, as it were. On the cusp of this new challenge. And the sermons of Deuteronomy, Moses comes and he reminds them again of who they are and what God demands of them. And he warns them again, doesn't he, about going after the gods of the nations round and about, which will just lead to destruction and to trouble and to, in the end, exile, as indeed it did. And at the end of this part of his sermon, he makes this amazing statement, doesn't he? The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. So let's just break the verse up briefly tonight into three sections and remind ourselves what this says to us as we stand on the cusp of another year and a new challenge. In some senses, it's an artificial thing, isn't it? Tomorrow is going to be just like today in lots of ways. It's just a trick of the calendar, isn't it? That tomorrow will be 2024 and today is 2023. But at this time, when the world has its New Year's resolutions and the world recognizes a new beginning, we as God's people can do the same thing if we center ourselves in his word. The secret things belong to the Lord our God. So there are things about the year ahead that we just don't know, do we? We are watching, I'm sure, some of the programs on the television, and the political experts are coming on and they're having their ideas about what next year will bring. Next year is a year when we're going to have an election, almost certainly, here in the UK, and there'll be another election in the United States. And we look at the world situation, we wonder what's going to happen in the Middle East. We look at the situation in Ukraine. We look at the situation in other parts of the world. And the experts come along, don't they? And they try to predict what's going to happen, try to think about the possible scenarios that take place. And it's all very interesting, isn't it? But they don't know, because these are things that are hidden from them. And it's at best a guess at the sort of things that might happen. And whatever happens, in a sense, in those situations, maybe they won't have that much impact upon us and upon our individual lives. And whichever party gets in at the next election, whoever wins the election in the United States, may not affect us. But then there are other things that do affect us, don't they? So what will happen to the economy? What will happen in our land? What will happen to jobs? What will happen to the cost of living? What will happen to... We don't know, do we? The experts will come and they'll make their predictions, but they don't know either, do they? But God knows. God knows what's going to happen in the future. The Bible tells us, knows the end of things from the beginning. God is the God who has mapped out all of the future. And it is all working for his glory. And it's all working for the good of his people. Because all things work together for good to those who are the called. As Romans 8 tells us. God knows those things, doesn't he? But then there are other things, aren't there, that are hidden from us. So what's going to happen in the year ahead to our health? What's going to happen to those that we love? What's going to happen to the things that are very real to us that we might be really concerned about? And we don't know the answer to those things, do we? We don't know what 2024 is going to bring for us. The Lord knows about those things. We reminded ourselves as we sang that lovely hymn of Joseph Parker just a few moments ago, don't we? God holds the key of all unknown, and I am glad. If other hands should hold the key, or if he trusted it to me, I might be sad. I think that's quite optimistic, isn't it? I don't think it's a might be sad. I think we would be sad, wouldn't we? Because we know what a mess mankind makes of it. Parker makes that lovely point in the third verse, doesn't he? The very dimness of my sight makes me secure. For groping in my misty way, I feel his hand. I hear him say, my help is sure. And Parker's right there, surely, isn't he? You know, it's the very dimness of our sight. The very fact that we don't know what the future holds that makes us reach out for God and grasp his hand and listen for his voice. He goes on, I cannot read his future plans, but this I know. I have the smiling of his face and all the refuge of his grace while here below. That's a lovely place to be, isn't it? So he says, I don't know what God is going to do, but I know this. I've got the smiling of his face. And I've got the refuge of his grace. So whatever the year ahead holds, if we apply it in that way, we know that his face will smile upon us. And we know that in times of difficulty and trouble, we can go for refuge in his grace. Because these secret things belong to the Lord our God. There are secret things that we all have, don't we? I think I've probably been in all of your houses at one point or another, and I see the things that you have in your house that are on display, things that you're happy for people to see. And lots of you have been in our house, and you see things in our house. But there are other things that you've got that I haven't seen, that are not on display, are they? Because they're your things, they're private things, they're secret things, they're things that belong to you, and they're not, in a sense, for other people to see. And, you know, that's how it is with God. There are things about God that are his things, things that we perhaps cannot look into, things that we cannot necessarily grasp ourselves. That's part of the fact of him being God, isn't it? That he is over and above us. His thoughts are above our thoughts. His ways are above our ways. And because of that, there are things, secret things, things that we can't grasp, that belong to him. And we need to leave them sometimes with him. You notice Deuteronomy 29 is written within this context, isn't it, of the children of Israel having seen the gods of the nations around. And we know that they've come, haven't they, on this pilgrimage through this land and that land. And one of the things that we're warned about, aren't we, in these books, is not to try to understand the future, to look into the future. In those days and in our days, there are people who claim to be able to see into the future and are able to bring you into touch with the things that are secret. And Deuteronomy warns us against those things because those things belong to the Lord. And he is the one who is sovereign over those things. And we are to trust him for it. You notice what it says here. The secret things belong to the Lord our God. You see, it's not just they belong to the Lord. It's not just they belong to God, but they belong to the Lord. Capital letters. In other words, the covenant-keeping God. Jehovah. The God who enters into covenant with his people. Who is in a living relationship with his people. And he is our God. He belongs to us and we belong to him. And so... We acknowledge that, don't we, that the things that are in the future, they belong to our God. And you know, God is the God who keeps us and he keeps them. God is the God who, if the future belongs to him, it's safe in his hands. He's not going to let us down because he's our God. He's not going to treat us badly. He's not going to break his covenant with us. He's a God that we can trust. He's a God that we can rely upon. He's a God in whom we can put our hope. And he's the God who is in control. He is the God who is sovereign. And he is the God who is Lord of all. And so, as we think about 2024... And by nature, our minds filled with anxieties and concerns and questions. It's good to remember, isn't it? Secret things belong to the Lord. And we can leave them there because he is our God and he loves us. And we are his people. But there's a but here, isn't there? The secret things belong to the Lord our God. But those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever. So there are some things that are secret, and there are some things that are revealed. And the things that are revealed do belong to us. The secret things don't. Those things that are hidden from us, they belong to our God. But there are other things that God reveals to us. And if he reveals them to us, they belong to us. And we've got to take hold of them. We've got to believe them. We've got to trust God through them as well. This verse reminds us, doesn't it, that God is the God who reveals. He reveals things to us. If God didn't reveal, we wouldn't know. That's the truth of it. God is a God who chooses to reveal himself to us. We would know nothing about God. We would know nothing about his love and his mercy and his grace. We would know nothing about his Trinitarian nature. We would know nothing about Christ. We would know nothing about the Spirit. We would know nothing about the truths of Scripture. But for the fact that God, in his grace and his mercy, chooses to reveal things to us. He is the revealing, self-revealing God. He reveals something of himself in creation, doesn't he? The heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament shows his handiwork. How do we know how glorious our God is? Well, Psalm 19 and Romans 1 tells us, doesn't it? You know, there's enough in creation alone for us to grasp the greatness of our God. Sometimes we see that, don't we? Lynn and I went over to see Len in Ystrad Mynach on Friday, and as we drove through Cwmfelyn Fach, there was the most glorious rainbow. It was, maybe you saw it, it was stunning. And I was driving the car, and I would have wanted to sort of stop and just look at it. And you just thought, this is glorious, this beautiful rainbow. And our minds went back to Genesis 6 to 8 and God's covenant. But it was stunning, wasn't it? And sometimes we see these things in creation, don't we? A beautiful spring day or an autumn frost or a rainbow or the power of a thunderstorm. And we say, yes, our God is great. And he's revealed something of himself in the glory of God. Or we think about Psalm 8, when David looks up at the stars at night and he sees the moon and the stars that God has created. And he says, what's man? That you're mindful of him, or the Son of Man that you visit him. You see, creation reveals God to us. And then, of course, God gives us his word, doesn't he? And God gives us his word so that we might know him. He tells us something of himself, and he reveals his holiness and his beauty and his majesty and his grace and his mercy and his word. He chooses to reveal those things to us. But then, of course, Hebrews 1 tells us, doesn't it? God, who spoke to the fathers in different times and in different ways, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, who is the brightness of the Father's glory, who is the express image of his person. And so ultimately, gloriously, God has revealed himself to us in Jesus Christ. And in a sense, because we live this side of the cross, and Deuteronomy 29 is written that side of the cross, there are greater and more wondrous things that have been revealed to us, even than were revealed to these people in Deuteronomy 29. And God has revealed those things to us. He's revealed who he is. He's revealed what he loves. He's revealed what he hates. He's revealed to us the wonders of Jesus. He's revealed to us the amazing truths of the cross and of atonement and of redemption and of forgiveness of sins. And then he sent his Spirit, hasn't he? And the great truth that we can be indwelt by God's Spirit and led by God's Spirit so that we might live according to his ways. These things he's revealed to us. We can't say we don't know them. We can't say they're secret things that just belong to God. These are things that belong to us, his people. And you notice, they didn't just belong to us, but they belong to us and to our children forever. This great covenant picture that we have in the book of Deuteronomy, book of the covenant law, and this lovely picture that we have here of all Israel standing there, of the men and the women and their little ones, and the stranger who's within their gates, and you have this wonderful picture of the community. And God says through his word and through Moses, you know, those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever. You see, God has let us in to those mysteries. God has let us in to those great truths. He didn't have to do that, but he does that in his grace and in his mercy. And so you and I are able to come into these things. As Christians, we do come into these things. We come into these promises. We come into to the life that is in God, that comes to us through Jesus Christ. And these things become our possessions if we are God's people. Now, if that's true, we want in 2024 to know these things more and more, don't we? We want in 2024 to enjoy those things that God has revealed to us more and more. And of course, that means we're going to be people who rejoice in those things and who relish those things and who want to experience those things more and more. So we're going to be people of the word, aren't we? Because ultimately, that is how God, by his Spirit, speaks to men and women today. He has given us his word, and we're going to come before him, and we're going to seek his face in prayer, aren't we? Because, again, that is how God speaks to us, as we speak to him and as we express our love for him as his children, and as we come before him desiring his glory and his honour. We're going to want to be with his people, aren't we? So when God's people are meeting together on the Lord's Day, we want to be there. We want to be under the sound of the preaching of the word. We want to be part of the fellowship as we glorify to God together in our worship, and as we encourage one another through the singing of our hymns, ministering to each other, as Paul tells us in Ephesians and in Colossians. We want to be at the place where public prayer is made. We want to be part of the evangelism of the church in one way or another. We want day by day to grow in grace and in the knowledge of the Lord Jesus. That lovely chapter we read in Philippians 1 reminds us of that, doesn't it? You know, Paul says, as he looks at that church in Philippi, you know, God's begun a work in you, and he's going to perfect it one day. He's going to go on doing that work. And what's the evidence of that work going on in us? Well, in the next few verses, as he prays for them, he prays that they might abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment. So that's a very high bar, isn't it? He wants them not just to know and to discern, but he wants them to abound more and more, that their love may abound still more and more in all knowledge and in all discernment, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offence till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Christ Jesus, to the glory and praise of God. That's what he wants for you. That's what he wants for me. That's what he wants for us as a church. Because you see, these things have been revealed to us. And if they've been revealed to us, they belong to us in that sense, don't they? And so we want to go on in those things. That's why Moses is saying those things in Deuteronomy 29, isn't he? What are these people going to be like when they step over into Canaan, when they cross the Jordan, when they're actually in the land? What sort of people are they going to be like? There are things about God that are secret. They belong to him. But these things that he's revealed to them, they belong to the people now. And they belong to the generations that follow. And they belong to God's people forever. But then there's a third thing there, isn't there, in this verse. The secret things belong to the Lord our God. Those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. You see, ultimately, all of these things should lead us to obedience and should lead us to action. You see, these truths are lovely truths, aren't they? You know, the secret things belong to the Lord. So I don't have to worry about those things, because worrying never changes anything anyway. But I can just keep there in God's hands. And the things that haven't been revealed to me yet, well, I can just trust him for those things. The things that God has revealed to me, I can rejoice in those things because they belong to me. They belong to us. They belong to his people. But you see, that truth, if we've perceived it as it really is, affects our lives, affects our actions, affects the sort of people that we are and the way in which we live our lives. You see, again, let's go back to the context of this passage. You see, Moses is giving these final words, and he's given them to a people who he knows, because he's experienced it enough, are very capable of wandering off the straight and narrow. They're not the people who've been obedient. That's why it's taken them 40 years to get where they are. That's the punishment, isn't it, that God set upon his people. You remember, the book of Numbers tells us a story, doesn't it, how the spies go into the promised land, don't they? And this is the land that God has given to them. He's sworn that he will give it to them. He's sworn by himself that he will give it to them. He promised it to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob hundreds of years before. He led them out of Egypt, and they'd seen all these great wonders. The chapter that we read began with that, doesn't it? And he's kept them, hasn't he, all the time in the wilderness. And you remember how the spies go across, don't they? And they see all the same things, the 12 spies, one from each tribe. And two of them come back, don't they? Joshua and Caleb, and they come back. They say, yes, we can go. We can take the land. This is the land that God has given us. But the other 10 say, don't they? No. The people are like giants. If we go there, we're surely going to be defeated. And they bring back this bad report, don't they? They've seen the same things as Joshua and Caleb. But no, the people, they hear the 10, don't they? And they don't go. And God says, well, that's the choice you've made. This generation will walk through the wilderness until this generation dies out. And these people, all the time, they show themselves to be a disobedient people and a stiff-necked people. And the people who don't trust God, do they? And Moses is making this last pleading with them to be people who trust and who live the life that they should live as God's people. And again, he's reminding them of the covenant, reminding them of the law. And he's telling them these things that they might do it. You know, obedience is always the mark, the covenant mark of God's covenant people, whether it's Old Testament, whether it's New Testament. We are to be people who obey. We are to be people who live the life. We're to be people who walk according to the commandments of our God. We're to be people who are led by him and who follow him and who veer not to the left or to the right, but walk in his ways. We are to be people of faith. We're to be people like Christ, aren't we? What was Jesus? Well, he said, I delight to do your will. Whatever the Father gave him to do, whatever the Father gave him to say, whatever works that he did, they are the works of his Father in heaven. And that's what he wanted to do. That's what his life was. That's the obedience that by God's grace is put to our account as our sins are placed upon him. He was one who did according to what God had said. And so here we are on the cusp of another year, heading into 2024. What sort of people are we going to be? Well, Moses would say to us, and Paul would say to us, and Christ would say to us, be the people that you should be. Be the people who are obedient to your Father in heaven. Be the people who, yes, acknowledge that the secret things belong to God, but people who take hold of the things that God has revealed to us, but also be the people who do all the words and all the works of what God has laid before us, that we might live for his praise and for his glory.